You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast for the Cut Jib Newsletter and the Ace of Spades Moron Horde. This is your host, J.J. Sefton. This is episode 8. This is Thursday evening, January 27th. I am joined for the first time. But first, let's introduce our regulars, CBD, misanthropic humanitarian, and now, for the first time on the airwaves, our own Buck Throckmorton. Gentlemen, good evening.
Good evening, gents.
Good evening. Hey, Buck. Nice to see you here.
Pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invite.
Well, we needed somebody who wouldn't curse so much. So, because Ms. Hume has a foul mouth.
Yes, you okay. Guys do, but that's okay.
I'll just say bratwurst instead.
Bratwurst. And speaking of bratwurst, what are we going to talk about tonight, gentlemen? What's on the agenda? I know the big story, of course, is which we're going to, I'm sure, touch upon is the retiring of the wonderful Stephen Breyer from the Supreme Court of the United States and his replacement with a black woman. You know, of course, forget about qualifications, but we have to have a black woman, whoever that black woman may be. Of course, Janice Rogers Brown notwithstanding.
Yeah, one thought I have about that is that I'm just so envious of our friends on the left side of the aisle that, as our politicians would say, they don't even have to pretend to care about qualifications. They don't have to pretend to care about the Constitution. They just want a reliable left-wing vote. And I am so ready for us to start doing the same. Forget the Federalist Society. Forget anything else. Just, will you vote our way? And that's the qualification. We're just going to replace one lefty with another lefty here.
Well, Buck, I think you wrote about that recently, maybe the last couple of months. Yeah, and I think it's a tremendous point and something that, unfortunately, the Republican Party will not embrace. You're absolutely right. Federalist Society, they can go fuck themselves. What we need is a firebrand conservative who will vote against the socialization of America. That's it. That's all we need. We need to get somebody who is, frankly, insane about the Constitution, loves it, embraces it, and relishes the fight that he will have every single time an interesting case comes up before the Supreme Court. But again, that's a pipe dream. That'll never happen.
So where is the next Antonin Scalia?
That's a great question. I mean, are Antonin Scalias even being produced in the law schools, in the universities? Because I think that's being, obviously with the curriculum as it is, which is as a critical race theory, which I now call, you know, Jive Kampf, written by Mr. Ibram Excrement, whatever his name is. All of these things are, of course, racist and meant to keep the black man down and the white man supreme. So the Constitution is obviously out the door. So what does it mean even? I mean, I even saw that when Breyer officially announced his retirement, he holds up a copy of the Constitution. And I'm like going, what is this? This is like Yasser Arafat holding up an olive branch and in his other hand he's got a pistol. So what does it really mean to be on the Supreme Court, considering we are, you know, from my point of view, it's obviously, as some people say, a post-constitutional America, if we're not even beyond into a post-America America? What is it really going to mean going forward?
Yeah, there's that deafening silence. We don't know.
We don't know.
It'll be more polarized. That's all I can.
It's funny is, you know, they always accuse the Republicans, you know, of having a litmus test. And, you know, and this thing back in the campaign where Biden said, I'm going to have a black woman. I mean, Judas freaking Priest. Now, is that better language there, Charlie? Judas freaking Priest. We don't care if they're qualified. You know, it's one thing to be, you know, left of center, leftist, but, you know, still be a halfway decent jurist. We can disagree about judicial philosophy, but, you know, let's just pick somebody out with a vagina that's got darker melatonin than everybody else. And that's, you know, and that's just bullshit. And every one of them, Supreme Court, it's a political move. They don't even look at the law anymore on the left. It's what they want the law to be, you know, and to hell with the founding fathers because, well, yeah, that's right. They were racist and slave owners and, you know, and went to church and whatnot. So,
you know, it goes to what we think of what the government is today and what our society is. And we have this illusion of, you know, it's checks and balances. It's a judiciary. It's a legislature. It's an executive branch that all have a check on each other. And it's been that myth is completely exploded. If it wasn't exploded with, you know, Roe versus Wade 50 years ago, almost when, you know, I wasn't necessarily paying attention to it, but it's just to advance the football, it's basically, or to advance the agenda of socialism any cost. So what we basically have is whatever, I quoted it this morning, what that horrendous malignancy Pelosi said when she was talking about Obamacare. You know, they'll get it done at any cost. If they build a, you know, if they build a fence, we'll go around the fence. If they build it higher, we'll pole vault in and we'll just do whatever we have to do to get it done. And what she's really saying is whatever horrible law that they know that they can never pass through regular order, through the legislature, they will try to ram through an unelected bureaucracy, which in and of itself, the entire bureaucracy, if you want to get down to it, is really unconstitutional. But they pass these edicts and these regulations that have the force of law. So ultimately, when it winds up at the court, you pack that court with not with people who have a fealty to the Constitution, but have a fealty for the leftist agenda. And they'll just rubber stamp it, and it's etched in stone for all time. And that's it. So we're not even...
What you just described is the ultimate failure of conservatism in the United States, because with a limited government, no matter what the court does, it will be controlled to a certain extent. But as you grow a Leviathan, you have an entire country in the thrall of the next Supreme Court holding. And that's what's terrifying about it, is that though these decisions immediately have significant effects on the entire country. Whereas, you know, in 1840, yeah, sure, it was important, but it wasn't that important.
Yeah. Real quick here, JJ, following exactly along with that, where JJ talks about checks and balances, and now we've outsourced everything to the judiciary and the bureaucracy, is that we do not have a check on the judiciary. The judiciary is no problem checking the other two branches, but there's nothing to check the judiciary right now. And then one thing I would really like to see before Kavanaugh and Comey fully transition to their new role as leftists is a couple, which is happening, we all know that there's a couple conservative decisions come down that the whole ruling class says, we can't abide by this. We're not going to abide. And that is the ticket for what, as you talk about, weak Republicans would have never done, stood up to the courts. If the left will stand up to a conservative court ruling now, that could really be a blessing for us in the future.
Well, look at what this, look at what this, you know, Cuomo with boobs, Kathy Hochul, has just done. I mean, basically, I know that reinstated her edict of a mask mandate in New York State, but initially it was struck down by a court. And she basically told the schools, and the schools agreed with her, just disregard what the court has to say. And I'm going, you got to be freaking kidding me. I mean, whenever we had some ruling that was in our favor, it's not even a question of our favor, in the favor of the Constitution, of freedom, of liberty, immediately they shopped for a judge out in Hawaii, whether it was Book M. Dano or Tiny Bubbles or Macadamia or whatever the judge was, and somehow a judge in Hawaii overrules a law that's passed either in Texas or Florida or some other place, and they have to abide by it. So what I'm just saying, what's to stop a governor who has the cojones to say, thank you for your opinion, judge, but we're not going to abide by you? And then all of a sudden, all bets are off, as they say.
Well, but it will be framed by the media, by the compliant media, as a constitutional crisis, and they will whip the left wingers into a frenzy. And we're talking about one or two governors who even have the fortitude to do that. One of them is going to be president in 2025. So, anyway,
is he a Floridian?
Yes. How did you know?
Andrew Gillum.
I thought I was a secret.
But. All right, we'll take a break for 2 minutes. We'll be back in a second. Hang on. And we're back. This is Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, episode 8 of the podcast, recording on the evening of Thursday, January 27th. JJ Sefton, CBD, misanthropic humanitarian, and joining us for the first time, the great Buck Throckmort. Buck, welcome. And I know one of the topics that you were talking about is the total, complete, insane corporate sellout to both the power brokers and just the totalitarians and globalists, and against what we always commonly thought of as a bulwark, pardon the pun, of freedom and liberty, which is the free enterprise system.
Yeah, it's I've written about that quite a few times. I used to think that it was just executives playing to the woke left, because frankly, if you're attacked from the left and not from the right, and the right, our sacred principles are, we don't boycott, we don't inflict our politics. Well, they were going to do the natural thing, which is to accommodate the left so they don't get canceled. I have started to realize that the C-suites are starting to be populated by people who genuinely believe that stuff now. It's not just pure defense. They genuinely believe that they are saving society, embracing all the diversity, all the America is terrible. And that also justifies profit. And then there's the other part of it, too, where I actually have a piece coming out tomorrow in the Rant that where wokeness is also to distract from really bad news or big scandals. Like good old Megan Rapinoe, she's hired by Victoria's Secret, whose sales are plummeting, and their CEO is a good buddy of Epstein. And then you have Subway, whose sales are plummeting, and they have their Jared Fogle scandal. And so there she always is. And so coming out tomorrow, Eminem suddenly is going green, all progressive. What are they doing? Oh, there's all this news breaking about their use of child slave labor in Africa.
What a coincidence. Yeah.
I don't know. Megan Rapinoe for Victoria's Secret. I don't know. That's sort of like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I would believe, I guess, Arnold Stang for the Ford F-150 over that. I don't know. It doesn't make any sense for me. You know,
back in the day, I mean, I used to work in corporate America, and we had this odd focus, and that was that the goal of the corporation was to maximize shareholder value within the constraints of the corporate culture. And that corporate culture was very carefully defined. You know, we obeyed the law. We had a certain way that we strived to treat our employees, but it was very, very carefully defined as profit. The goal was to make money. I'm unsure how, what is it, the M&M Mars Corporation is going to make more money or as much by offending the typical mom who's out buying packets of M&Ms for her kids to take to soccer practice or to take to lacrosse practice or whatever. How does that benefit corporate America? Where are they getting this new market? And the answer, of course, is that they're not, because the goal is no longer profit. And that shocks me.
When you get to a point where they're, as because of the pandemic and the lockdowns, I guess, exacerbated or accelerated it, when less and less options and choices and businesses there are out there, and more of these former businesses that go under are absorbed into more giant mega corporations, like Amazon, like Unilever, like whatever, like Nike or whoever it is, it almost doesn't, you now get to the point where we almost have a communist or fascistic government controlling the means of production. And so it doesn't matter what their politics are going to be, what their politics are, because when you have two manufacturers who make shoes, you're going to go to one or two, and both of them are going to be government controlled, and that's it. You have no choice. Otherwise, you're going to be forced to sit in your basement and make your own Nikes. So
you're extrapolating Buck's point to make it rent-seeking. They're simply pleasing not only the hard left, but they're pleasing the hard left's masters in Congress. Where is the money going to come from?
Well, see, and that's the problem with corporate America, and my opinion is that the corporations have just gotten to be too big. It's Buck and JJ and I and you, Charlie, as in CBD. We could go to a shareholders meeting and we're, you know, okay, so we have each 25 shares. Okay, we got 100 shares between the four of us, but we're going to be outvoted by some hedge fund that's controlling how many shares, and as long as, you know, it's green, they're making some money, but they're going with the green deal or they're going with the woke deal, they're going to vote that way. And, you know, we saw that back in 2008 when they were talking about companies were too big to fail. And that's the problem, is that Main Street America just doesn't have the sway anymore. We talked earlier in the last segment about, or earlier in this segment about boycotting. Conservatives don't boycott per se. I mean, there's some products I'll stick away from because of, you know, they're leftist or what have you. But right now I work for a major, major company, and I just basically do my job and keep my nose to the grindstone and work, 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 and make sure that we got a good ROE at the end of the year. But, you know, I get some of these corporate emails and they're talking about, well, my preferred pronouns are X, Y. Fuck that shit.
Well, that's
you're a sheep.
Thing.
You're not in.
Mizum, you can't say that. That's the problem. Is you cannot say that because I know. I don't mean you. I don't mean you, but I mean the royal you of everybody listening.
I know.
We can't say that because we will be worse than ostracized. Yeah. We will have our lives cut short. Whether even if you forget physical violence, you'll be black. A bank will not allow you to do business with them. A job will fire you. Perhaps an apartment building will throw you out, and you can complain and bitch and moan all you want and go to the the court. But what will they do? They're within their. It's on you. Yeah. So I mean, this is the most insidious. And again, going back to Buck's point about. You know, just and everyone's point really about what's going on with corporate America in that the C-suites are now being invaded by these true believers, you know, from whose minds were poisoned for 50 years. All of a sudden, they are acting as the Gestapo and the enforcers for the government, whereas the government maybe not be able to do that by themselves without literally turning into an actual Gestapo. But this is how they do it. It's basically, forget the Gestapo. It's more like the Stasi.
Well, I have a perfect example. You're talking about the financial sector and what you can and can't buy. On January 4th, I made a purchase, an internet purchase of a firearm. It was below my credit card notification number. I had no sooner made that purchase, and then boom, it was like something came from that particular credit card. It's like, did you authorize this sale? It's like, it's $600 under the fucking notification. Why are you contacting me? Oh, because it was a gun company.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, well, so now does that gun purchase go from, well, you know, their wokeness to some other, you know, Bob at ATF or what have you? I don't know.
So what happens?
Scary.
What happens when Blue and Red America begin to separate even more than they are? We have corporations that pull out of Red America, or hopefully pull out of Blue America. Is the stratification of American society going to extend into corporations?
The one thing I feel really strongly about is the big red states have such a burden to help save this country from the woke left. And that's one reason that I've been so frustrated with Greg Abbott in Texas, my old state, that he's been weak. We've got to have the Floridas, the Texases, the Georgias that are going to stand up to woke capital, that will tell woke corporations, no, you're not imposing on us. We're imposing on you, and dare those mega companies to pull out of Florida, to pull out of Texas.
You know, I believe somebody, I forgot who, and I'd have to look it up, one of the states, I forgot who, I'd have to look it up, basically told Blackwater to go take a hike. They pulled its pension funds out of Blackwater, and, you know.
What was that?
I don't know. You dropped out there.
It was West Virginia. I think it's whatever official treasurer or someone there is pulling funds out of banks that are not favorable to coal or their energy.
Yeah, I mean, that's the start.
That's exactly Buck is talking about. I think that's fantastic, and that needs to happen every single day. He's 100% correct.
Take a break and be back in two. Hang in there. Cut Jib Newsletter speaks. And we're back, and the subject was crime. I had a rant in my morning report yesterday about probably one of the most vile human beings that in a previous life I actually had the displeasure of meeting, the actor Michael Rapaport, who was, you might know him from True Romance and a bunch of other, who knows what else he's been in, but he was in a Rite Aid drugstore on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, and he was just totally incredulous at the fact that some goof was walking up and down the aisles and essentially filling up a satchel with items and shoplifting them, and like nobody was challenging them. And he literally videotaped the thing or filmed it on his camera, posted it on Instagram. And, you know, aside from the fact that this guy could have, you know, could have been like in New York where they shove you in front of a subway train, could have pulled out a gun or pulled out a knife and stabbed him in the eye. And Michael Rapaport is incredulous that this is happening in New York. And he's going, you know, it was bad under William de Blasio, who I call the Bolshevik. And let's hope Eric Adams is going to turn this around. And I'm going, oh, what a schmuck. Here's a guy. I mean, Eric Adams, I think on day four of the job, after this poor woman was pushed in front of a subway, when they were talking about crime and you know, the whole decriminalization of crime with this, among others, it was, you know, Cy Vance and this guy Alvin Bragg. He's going, well, the subway isn't as bad as everybody thinks it is. And boy, did he get reamed a new one. Now, all of a sudden, he's going to be meeting with Joey Biden to talk about gun control. That's the problem. But just insane what is going on in our blue cities. It's out of control.
Hey JJ, following up on what you wrote about yesterday, I actually today just for fun looked up with reading that CVS was closing all these locations in New York, as you wrote about. I looked up Rite Aid, all these locations and what was their CEO's letter during all the rioting in summer of 2020. And sure enough, there it was, that we stand by BLM. We support BLM. We also support our employees, and we will support them and rebuilding where there's damage. And most of all, we stand by our communities. He lied. They're leaving the communities. They're quitting the people in New York. Poor Mr. Rapaport, who need those stores. No correction about, we were wrong. Those riots were destructive, and they're pushing us out of the neighborhood. All I could do was praise BLM at the time.
Well, you know, it's either one of those things. It's like a hostage letter where you sort of, you know, you have to do that, because in the old days, as the story goes, when Joe Colombo, the head of the Colombo crime family of the mafia, which if the mafia really does exist, which I'm not sure it does. Hint, hint. He was head of this thing called the Italian American Anti-Defamation League. And as the story goes, you would give the store owners would give him $10, and you put the sticker in your window, because if you didn't do that, you might have your windows broken. So is the question is, or does it really matter? Is the head of Rite Aid woke, or is he just doing this for self-defense? Either way, you know, he's a lying skunk, because now all of a sudden he's pulling out, and oh, lo and behold, we're going to have medicine deserts. We had food deserts. Now we have medicine deserts in the poor neighborhoods.
And gee, pay, you know something, Kate? Payback's a bitch. Yesterday, I had to go pick up a gift for my mother-in-law at a high-end store in a high-end mall near me. Now, I'm in northern New Jersey. It's quite liberal and quite blue. And I turned the corner, and there was Neiman Marcus. I was going there. And there was a high-end clothing store, Versace or something. I don't remember which one it was. And I looked, and there was a man with a pistol standing there guarding that store. Now, this is a high-end place. We're not close enough to any of the real ghettos of New Jersey for them to be wilding or, you know, running through there with packs of kids. But there was a man with a gun guarding a store in northern New Jersey in a pretty nice mall. And I walked over and I chatted with him. Turns out he's a New York City detective, retiring in 2 weeks, couldn't be happier. And I looked at him, I said, what the hell's going on? And he said, yeah, this is the new normal in the blue states. Whether he would use that pistol, I doubt it very much. But it's intended to be a deterrent against something that wasn't even dreamed of 2 years ago.
Well, not only is New York City losing the pharmacies, you know, so is San Francisco. We've covered that on the ONT with, I believe it was Walgreens just, you know, they can't, you know, tolerate all the shoplifting anymore. They're just closing. And shocking that a store in New Jersey would have an armed guard. Whereas you go to a state like mine or Bucks, and I bet you the cash register, the guy at the cash register at the local hardware store has got a piece sitting in his cash register somewhere in his counter to stop this kind of crap. But see what happens, like you're just talking, Charlie, about 2 years ago, you wouldn't imagine it. But it's appeasement. Appeasement does not work. You can't appease the leftist inner city people and their leaders and the Jesse Jacksons and stuff. You're going to have crime. If the government is going to be the parent of these welfare recipients and not correct their children, they're going to run wild. You can't have a society where, you know, half the country's got morals and the other half doesn't.
Along those lines, something that I'd kind of been thrown around with Mr. CBD that's going to my head, that some of these mayors, I genuinely think, were ready to see their cities destroyed. And I jokingly call it the Pol Pot moment, that they saw the confluence of the pandemic, the BLM riots, the crime wave, that they are ready to reorganize society. And the southern city that I live nearby, no one really realized that the mayor was a little trust fund Bolshevik. He was almost pleading with people to riot. He was doing all his powers to try to shut down all the businesses he didn't want. And I think a bunch of these, well, you look at what happened to Portland, Seattle, all these cities, they were ready. This is the revolution. And the crime wave was part of their effort to overhaul society.
Whatever the crisis that pops up, the convenient crisis that they can't let go to waste, you know, that's it. You cause such chaos, such horrendous death and destruction that people will beg for an authoritarian figure to come in and crush it all. So yeah, you abolish the police, but then here comes the military, and then you all of a sudden have just, you know, martial law declared, and that's it, and game over. Sure, the underlying reasoning of this whole thing is, yes, the police are illegitimate and people are, as Alexandria Titicaca Cortez used to say, you know, they're only rioting because they need bread, which was total crock.
Oh, bread and flat screens.
Yes, bread and flat screens, baby. That's what it is. It used to what? Bread and, yes, yeah, guns and butter. How do you say bread and flats? Hermann Goering can say, you know, bread and flat screens in German. It sounds much better. But yeah, they're just using this whole thing, whether they believe, you know, that they're redressing a grievance, or it's really more insidious, is that the people pulling their strings are using that grievance as a means and as a weapon to overturn and overthrow society. It's truly, either way we are, it's really dangerous. There again, this is, as Charlie says, it's another sort of cleaving of us into the blue, into the red, and if even the blue will allow that to happen, which, because when we start having all the knowledge and all the farms and all the manufacturing and everything else, they have nothing and they start starving, they're not going to allow that to happen.
You know, so that's point about some of these mayors and unfortunately some of even these governors is interesting, because I look around at some of these cities and I wonder, how did they elect a mayor who is perhaps not significantly, but certainly to the left of most of the people who vote? Okay, Portland and Berkeley and you know, a couple of Austin maybe, although I doubt that very much. Madison. There are only a few cities in the United States that are truly hardcore left wing, and yet we have, as Buck pointed out, hundreds of Pol Pot mayors. I'm going to use that, by the way. I love that. How does that happen? Have they been cheating for the last 40 years? Are they simply better organized? What is going on? Where do we get these mayors?
I think just like in the C-suites, I think it's a product of the brainwashing mills over the last however many generations and 40 years of schools of, you know, as older people die off or retire or whatever or are forced out, you know, the vacuum's got to be filled. And all of a sudden, here come these, you know, as the great Rush Limbaugh, peace be upon him, said, young skulls full of mush, worse than mush, full of absolute cancer. They're coming in to run your city, not only your governments, but they're running your companies, they're running, you know, everything from Main Street to Wall Street and everything in between. So this is the battlefront. That's where,
you know,
it comes
from. Lines. I really think that conservatives, Republicans, the right, whatever, we've surrendered the cities, that we haven't developed a good urban conservatism, because there are a whole bunch of Republicans who had no use for Giuliani. He's not conservative, but you need a different kind of conservative to administer a big city with big city services. And you can't just say limited government, limited taxes. Well, people will vote for the leftists then.
You know, and the thing is down in southeastern Wisconsin, and JJ, you'll see this eventually, it's called the WOW counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, I forget what the other one is. You know, there's some really, really conservative suburbs down there. I mean, they vote Republican, it's like 85 to 15. But yet, you listen to Milwaukee Talk Radio and you hear about the some of these school boards that in these areas that were 85-15, but yet you swear that the school board came from Berkeley or Madison. And
well, that's exactly where they came from. That's where they got their education.
But see,
I'm not kidding.
The thing is, I don't know. Is it the way our brains are wired? If you're conservative, you're Republican, do you really want to get involved? Because, like, school boards, you want to change. And, yeah, I ran for school board once and damn near got elected as a protest candidate. Oy. So I don't know. It's just something about cities and municipalities where, well, even up here in rural tundra land, you know, we've got government guys that, you know, oh, we got to tax because we got to have the roads and bullshit. And it's just like, oh, man, you know spend less.
I think it is as simple as, at least partly as simple as, conservatives don't want to be involved with government. I don't like going to my city hall. I don't like going to the county seat. It doesn't make me happy. It makes me want to puke. Driving into Washington, D.C., and I see the hundreds of billions of dollars pissed away on grand buildings and crap, it bothers me. I want nothing to do with it. There's no way in hell I would ever run for anything in my little town. I'm not interested. I want to be as far away from that crap as possible.
I think part of it, I was going to say, is that we have to now move away, as, you know, Mizumi, you were talking about, Republican, conservative, Democrat, liberal. I think we now have to move beyond just the names, because the names are just too poisonous, whatever they are, whether you think of that or not, to too many people on both sides of the spectrum here. I think we're now seeing, hopefully, a sea change in some people, even as knuckleheaded as a Michael Rappaport might be, who know, you know, forget about party politics. It's what's in front of your face, what's hitting you in the face that's right and that's wrong. And the first person, the first politician or the first leader or the first somebody who could say, to hell with the Democrat or Republican, look, when some goof is coming into a store and robbing it clean to the point where we have to lose our drug stores, when somebody is setting fire to things or somebody is doing this, I don't give a damn what the reasoning is. This is wrong. And we have to now band together to put a stop to this. And then, maybe then, we can sit down reasonably and say, look, this is how we should organize a community out of respect for one another. And whatever the issues beyond that come up, yeah, we'll talk about that. Let's get back to that. But this is, you know, we're talking about things falling apart to such an extent that something like that has to be done. Back to wrap it up. This is Kutchiv Newsletter Speaks, episode 8, January 27th. A few final thoughts. Buck, what are you thinking? What's top of mind for you as we close up?
Pleasure to be invited to join y'all. It's been a real pleasure joining the Ace of Spades team the past couple of years. So thank you for having me on.
It is our pleasure. CBD, what are you thinking?
Well, I have these notes about what we're going to talk about, and one of them is Winter Olympics, but apparently nobody gives a shit about the Winter Olympics, so let's not talk about
it. We'll wait for the movie from Leni Riefenstahl, Pugy, yeah, comes out, and then we'll all be cheering. Ms. Final thoughts, sir.
I've been asked to say bratwurst on the air, so there. We have some interesting people at the Ace of Spades. No, it's been a really wonderful chat. Good to meet and chat with Buck. He's a great writer. Glad he's aboard. And it's been a real interesting podcast.
As we say, it's been more than a pleasure. It's been an inconvenience. And if you enjoyed this half as much as we did, then we enjoyed it twice as much as you did. On behalf of Buck Throckmorton, CBD, misanthropic humanitarian, J.J. Sefton saying adios, aloha for now, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye.